the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Social Security has always been considered part of the three-legged stool for retirement: Social Security, your pension, and your own savings. But could Social Security be heading for trouble? Joining me on the program is Dr. Lawrence Kotlikoff. He's a William Warren Fairfield Professor at Boston University. He's an author, and he's also a write-in candidate for the presidential race in 2016. Professor, let's begin with Social Security. The Social Security Trustee Fund released the report a couple of weeks ago, and talking about that the liabilities of Social Security keep increasing, you have a figure of unfunded liability or a fiscal gap of $199 trillion. So let's talk about the Social Security Trust Fund report, which nobody is talking about, and then also your own numbers.
The $199 trillion is the fiscal gap for the entire fiscal enterprise, including Social Security, and that's the value in the present of all projected future spending expenditures, including servicing the official debt out till the end of time. But you're making numbers that are very far out. You're discounting them, and discounting means to make less of them. So you're making them smaller because they're not worth as much because they're very far away in the future. So we economists have a natural way to adjust for that. So you get the present value of all the spending that's projected by the CBO, and you get the present value of all the taxes projected by the CBO, and the difference is the fiscal gap, and it's the true red ink that the country faces. It's putting everything on the books. It's not leaving Social Security obligations and Medicare, Medicaid, and defense spending obligations all off the books because they're all there. You know, you have to pay for those things. It's not like we're never going to have a defense department or a military. So we're $199 trillion in the red. So the country is dead broke. That $199 trillion is 53% of the present value of taxes. So that another way of saying this is that we're 53% underfinanced, and we need a 53% immediate and permanent tax hike. And that number will go up to more like 70% if we wait 20 years. So our kids will face an even bigger disaster, you know, if we just sit back and say, oh, they'll handle it. So it's generational warfare, fiscal child abuse that we're involved in. Now, Social Security's fiscal gap, which is part of the 199, is today, according to the trustees report that you referenced, is $32 trillion large. Last year, it was $26 trillion. So it actually grew by $6 trillion. That system is 32% underfinanced, according to this year's trustees report. Last year, it was 31% underfinanced. So we have a disaster with Social Security. So it's part of a bigger disaster with our entire fiscal enterprise. This is why I'm running for president, because we have candidates who either understand this and are not talking about it, in which case they're lying. And we know that both of these candidates are very adept at lying with no embarrassment whatsoever. They're trained liars. And the other option or alternative here is possibility is that they do not know the magnitude of our fiscal problem, which means that they're not qualified to understand anything about our economic situation, because that is like the most important factor in thinking about how to fix and the need to fix Social Security, the need to fix healthcare, the need to probably adjust downward some of the defense spending, because we're spending more than ten times the next highest defense spender, which is probably China or Russia at this point. And we need to also have higher taxes. So we have to think about tax reform in a serious way. You have a know-nothing candidate in Trump, and you have a do-nothing candidate in Clinton. They're both extremely dangerous. A lot of people are telling me they're going to vote for Clinton to stop Trump, and others are saying they're going to vote for Trump to stop Clinton. Guess what? Either of these two people are going to destroy the country even further, and we're not going to fix anything. And in terms of social issues, neither of them is going to change those social issues much at all, because the Supreme Court has a whole series of decisions about abortion. They're not going to be overturning them, no matter who's appointed, because that's not part of the judicial tradition to, you know, you've got stare decisis. And you're also going to have a split Congress who's going to be able to block the other side's extreme nominees. So social issues are not going to be changing, just like they haven't changed. So that's not an excuse. And they're both going to be dangerous in a different way going forward. So anyway, that's a long-winded response to your very good question. Social Security is in terrible shape. I've been very concerned that everybody within a generation who's still in Social Security, and we still have a, you know, the traditional system going, I'd like to reform that. I'd like to freeze it and put a new modern system in place that will actually be funded and be here for our kids and be affordable. But we want to make sure that everybody within a generation is treated fairly. We also want to make sure that people across generations are treated fairly. And neither of those two things is happening right now. And that's why, you know, I wrote this book with a couple co-authors called Get What's Yours, The Secrets to Maxing Out Your Social Security. We have a long debate in the back of the book about the future of Social Security. My two co-authors are classic liberals, if I can use that term. I'm not a liberal. I'm not a conservative. I'm not political. But I think when people are not trained to look at numbers properly and they just have knee-jerk opinions that, well, Social Security is our beloved system and the Democrats put it into place and we're a Democrat and therefore we can't touch a single feature of it, and they understand the innards of this thing are so terrible and so unfair and such a kind of a racket the way Social Security is running things. And then they say, well, we don't have to worry about the unfunded liability of the system that's $32 trillion large. I don't get it. I just lose contact with rational discussion at that point because they both have kids and grandkids and they don't seem to give a damn about either of them. These are my co-authors. They'll say the same thing about me at some point. If you get them on the air equally strongly, that I'm naive and nobody knows what the future is about. But here's the thing. Countries that plan for the future aren't surprised by it. If you know for sure that you're heading over the cliff, not for sure, but with high probability that you're heading over the cliff, you put on the brakes. You don't speed up. And we've been speeding up for decades now. And the cliff is right there. And these guys and large fractions of Americans in the country are ignoring that cliff because they don't want to hear the bad news because either it scares them or they don't give a damn about their kids and grandkids or they just don't want to think. And I don't know what it is my co-authors are up to, but you know, you can have this nice, healthy debate in the back of our book to see their position, which is different from mine.
Professor, let me bring up a couple key things. Last November, Congress changed major rules on Social Security, and very little attention was given to it in the media. There were people like yourself that were talking about it. I was talking about it, but you saw it mentioned hardly ever in the mainstream media. That was one event. The second event is the Social Security trustees just issued a report, as you and I were just talking about. The unfunded liabilities went up by another $6 trillion in just 1 year. And you and I both believe those numbers are bigger. And the third thing is this is an election year where some of the candidates are promising even richer benefits to Social Security and Medicare when they know it's in trouble financially. I am just absolutely blown away, Professor, that the media, which is supposed to be the watchdog on government, is not exposing this so voters out there can get intelligent facts to make a decision.
I don't get the media at all because I don't think the media are doing their job. I think that they are doing a huge disservice to the public because, look, the trustees report just came out, and as they have in previous years, they keep hiding this table. I think it's table 6F1. It may have changed the table number, but it's the infinite horizon fiscal gap. And it's written in a rather cryptic way. It's not mentioned at all in the introduction by the trustees. So you have these politically appointed trustees who can't spit out the fact that the system is dead broke. And it's actually right there in their own report. They don't reference that table. They start referencing a 75-year fiscal gap, which is about 40% of the true number. And by the way, our kids and grandkids are going to be alive in 75 years. So we can't think about stopping the world in 75 years. We have to put everything on the books, which means all the expenditures even beyond 75 years. But we need to discount them and realize that they're not as important. A dollar 200 years from now is not as big a deal as a dollar today because we could put a whole lot less than a dollar in the bank today and end up with a dollar 200 years from now. So infinite horizon fiscal gap accounting is exactly what's correct to do. We've got it being done correctly by the actuaries of Social Security, and the politically appointed trustees are not even discussing it at all. And they make these casual statements about it's time for Congress to act quickly to deal with this Social Security problems. But there's no sense of urgency. Nobody's writing in the beginning of that report, the Social Security system is insolvent. The Social Security system is in far worse shape than the Detroit pensions. The Social Security system cannot be bailed out by the rest of the fiscal enterprise. It's not a small problem relative to Medicare. It's a major problem, and Medicare is an even bigger problem. You don't hear any of that because these people are liars. They basically either they don't know what they're talking about or they're lying about what they're talking about. I think it's time to put a a name on what's going on here. We've got the press being either manipulated or co-conspirators in lying in this fiscal child abuse that we're running as a nation. And that's one of the reasons I'm running. But the other thing is, you know, as an economist, professor of economics, I've studied banking reform. I wrote a book about banking reform. I wrote a book about healthcare reform. I've written about taxes, a book about that. I've written 19 books. I've written a book about Social Security. So I've thought long and hard about how to fix these institutions, and I've done it in the context of talking to many other economists. So the platform I have at Kotlikoff2016.com, which is where I'm running as a writing candidate, there's a 157-page platform book. So I'm not running around the country having pep rallies. I'm not running around the country saying, providing slogans. I'm not running around the country getting money to put up sound bites. I'm actually saying exactly what's wrong in very short, simple terms, and have very simple solutions that don't go 2,000 pages, but rather fit on a postcard, because we cannot have bureaucracies run our lives. We've got a war with bureaucrats as well. When you have a 2,000-plus page Dodd-Frank bill, which has just been a full employment act for bureaucrats and has not made our financial system any safer whatsoever, it's probably made it riskier, you have a problem. You have government bureaucracy, bureaucrats taking the opportunity to ensure that they have jobs for the rest of their lives and that more of them have more jobs. And that we cannot abide by either. We're spending too much on government and too much on bureaucrats. And then we've got to deal with these bureaucratic institutions like Social Security. And, you know, you referenced the change in the law. Well, the law was changed and Social Security sent out the wrong instructions for 4 months about the grandfathering provisions under the new law. So they've cost tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions, potentially tens of thousands of dollars. I've got people writing me all the time about having, in effect, been told things that were not true because Social Security sent out the wrong instructions to 40,000 staff members, and they had the wrong instructions up for 4 months on their website and in, you know, in email instructions to people about the new law. All incorrect. 40,000. So you've got people emailing me who lost $45,000 or $60,000 because they were told the wrong thing before the deadline. There was a key deadline for one of the grandfathering provisions, which was April 29th, 2016, and they missed the deadline because they were told they were not eligible when they were. So, you know, we have a system of people running Social Security that do not understand the law and cannot be trusted. So I've written this book to try and help people, but also I have this software company, and one of our programs is called MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. It's $40. The combination of the book and the software, if people learn nothing from our interview today, they should know that they do not want to be asking Social Security a single question. If they have a single conversation with Social Security, they should tape record it so they'll have proof of misinformation if they've been given it. And I think that's happening half the time. And they should run the software, read the book, and they will know exactly what to tell Social Security to do, because they should not be asking Social Security a single question, because they will get the wrong answer half the time. That's my estimate.
You know, Professor, what really surprises me, and you've been studying this subject as I have, especially over the last couple of years, and is there anybody in Congress? I mean, certainly if you and I can look at the trustees report, we can look at this backroom deal that they did that really put women at a disadvantage in Social Security last November. If you and I can look at these numbers, being intelligent people, and know that there's a problem here, what about those individuals that get elected to Congress or to the White House? I mean, these are pretty smart people. Are they basically just saying, you know what, we'll deal with it when it becomes a crisis? They don't want to take it on and deal with the hard choices that have to be made. Why do you think, number one, politicians who know about this aren't doing anything about it to correct it? And number two, those members in the media who are honest people aren't bringing it more to the forefront and attention of voters?
I think that in this soundbite world, where if you were to go public and say we need to fix Social Security, somebody the next minute can say that you want to cut Social Security and you're out to destroy Social Security. And so you need to be prepared with a plan for exactly what you want to do. And these guys, I don't think there's a single PhD economist there, so they really don't have an alternative. They don't know what they want to do with healthcare. They're not that competent, I think, the members of Congress, to figure out alternatives to defend themselves against charges from the other side. I think our two parties are really dysfunctional at this point, and that's why I'm running as an non-affiliated, independent candidate, if I'm elected, and by the way, my writing campaign has received more national press coverage than any writing campaign for the presidency in the post-war period, and there's no question about it. I don't know about the pre-war period, but I've been getting coverage by the Dallas Morning News, the Boston Globe, Bloomberg, Business Week, PBS, NPR, Newsmax, et cetera. So I think there's a way to get traditional politics out of our lives. And the way to do that is to elect somebody who's not a politician and who understands that the parties are the problem. Because just suppose that I were elected president, that would change perceptions dramatically. The parties would be, in effect, dead ducks. People would understand that individuals can run for office and win without the parties. We don't need the parties anymore. The press seemed to be very thick in the head about their candidate has to come from one of these two parties. Only 20% of the people vote in the primary. So we have a choice of candidates selected by only a fifth of our voters. That's not very democratic. So if I were elected as a writing candidate for president, the party system would be on its way out because people would start using the internet and social media, and media would get this idea too, that to listen directly to the individual, and then the individual would actually have some power and be empowered to actually speak the truth, I think. And we would just change the entire psychology and the entire nature of politics. And to get me elected as a write-in candidate is not hard, certainly in this environment when about half the population or more than half do not like either of these candidates or loathe both of these candidates. And all people need to do is go to my website, kotlikoff2016.com, endorse my running, decision to run. I've got a great running mate who's a brilliant economist from UCLA. And they have to find 10 other people to do the same and ask each of them to find 10 other people. We can make a chain letter or Ponzi scheme, if you like, that's actually beneficial, not a ripoff one. And we can make this thing become combinatorial and I can become president. So something's already happening, and given all the press coverage I've been receiving, and I think the whole thing can flip because people are not happy with having somebody who just missed being indicted and having somebody else who seems to be a lunatic, who seems to be incapable of figuring out what he wants to say from one minute to the next, unless he runs into the bathroom to ask himself a question in the mirror as to what he really thinks. And he's dangerous, but Clinton is dangerous too. I mean, Trump is suggesting he's going to break off trade relations with China. Congress is in charge of trade relations. So his power to do his crazy things like reneging on the government debt, it's not going to happen. He just doesn't have the power. He just has a big mouth that he doesn't know how to control. But Clinton may be the bigger danger because she will get nothing done. And these unfunded liability problems, these fiscal gaps will get bigger and bigger. We'll move to a point where we're not 53% underfinanced, but more like 60% or 70% underfinanced by the end of her administration. So if you don't see that the country is in a terrible fiscal hole and that we've kept almost all the bills off the books and we've done that intentionally with Enron-type accounting, you're not helping the next generation. You're at war with the next generation. I also think she's very unimaginative about foreign policy. I think she's tone-deaf or blind about North Korea. We've got North Korea with nuclear missiles that can now be put on top of ballistic missiles, and they're testing ballistic missiles all the time. And eventually they're going to be able, in her term probably, to hit any city in the U.S. This is like the Cuban Missile Crisis, and nobody's mentioned it, except I have in this book, in this platform book. Trump thinks he can call China on the telephone, and in 5 minutes, China can fix the problem. Who is he kidding? He's talking about having a trade war with China. We've got issues with China in the South China Sea. So we've got China as an adversary, and he's telling the public that he can get China to place a telephone call and in 5 minutes fix the North Korean nuclear problem. That's a statement of insanity because the man has no basis for making that. If he had some basis, then he could explain it, but he doesn't. So we have to just take that as an insane statement because we've been negotiating with the Chinese for 35 years, literally, on how to keep the North Koreans from acquiring nuclear weapons. And we've blithely let them acquire nuclear weapons. And now we've blithely let them miniaturize nuclear weapons. And now we're blithely letting them put them on ballistic missiles that they can reach any part. I don't know where you're calling from, Jim, but I'm in Boston, Mass, in downtown Boston. 10 years, they'll be able to target downtown Boston. And the idea that our anti-missile missiles will be that accurate as to block all the missiles being sent from North Korea, if they do get sent, is ridiculous because they're not going to be that accurate. So we don't want to risk losing a major city that will be, you know, imagine San Francisco were flattened forever and not inhabitable. Think about Chernobyl. It's the size of Switzerland. It cannot be inhabited for 300 years. This would be like a Mad Max movie if San Francisco were wiped out because of one missile that got through our missile defense. So we should be telling the North Koreans today, and this is what I say in my platform and what I'm standing for, you're not allowed to launch another missile of any type, small, medium, large. If you put it on a launch pad, we're going to wipe it out the next minute. And if it means war with North Korea, it means war. But we're also going to tell them we're ready to normalize relations. We're ready to sit down and deal with all the concerns and negotiate an accord between North and South Korea so we can end the war formally and proceed to help North Korea move ahead. But we're not prepared to let them endanger our children. This is also part of the entire.
I want to come back to Social Security a bit for a minute. We're seeing a rise of populism globally. We're seeing it in Europe. We just saw it with Brexit. We're seeing it in the United States. But the scary thing about populism is, okay, we had Bernie Sanders who lost the nomination, but he was going to expand Medicare, going to expand Social Security. It was going to give free college. With all these unfunded liabilities, you've got populism bringing us candidates. One was just investigated by the FBI and is a pathological liar. And the other one seems so off the wall with things that he throws out there. But yet, Professor, those are our two candidates for the presidency this year, besides yourself.
I would say they're the non-candidates, to tell you the truth, because they're not really candidates because they're not qualified to be president. And I think if people read the book at Kotlikoff2016.com, they'll realize I am qualified. I'm not the most qualified by a long shot. I'm not dying to do this job, but I do know how to fix things. I think if people that are concerned about their living standard are rightly concerned because we have inequality expanding, we have robots and other smart machines taking over our jobs, we have difficult competition from offshore, we have a ton of immigrants who are unskilled, and they're not the illegal immigrants, you know, coming in here illegally. The net flow of illegal immigration is negative. People are leaving the country or illegal immigrants at a greater rate than are coming in. The real problem is legal immigration. And those legal immigrants, about 850,000 of the million that are coming in, are competing directly with low-skilled workers in the U.S. and middle-class workers. We need to cut that down. We need to reduce the amount of immigration for many reasons, and we need to change the skill composition. So we need to address immigration, but we need to have somebody who knows what they're doing, somebody who has clear, simple plans for fixing Social Security, taxes, health care. The healthcare system is still a disaster, and not just in the sense of about 20 million people are still uninsured, but it's headed to doom because it cannot be paid for the way it's structured. It needs to be fundamentally reorganized so we have a uniform, federally paid for system, but private competition to provide healthcare. And there's a very simple plan for doing that, which economists largely endorse. And then you've got a banking system that has to be really made safe, and people need to have answers. And that's why they're so frustrated, because once we have those reforms and also a tax reform, we'll be able to start to grow again. What I'm putting forward, and also an educational plan and a carbon tax plan, I'm putting forth a kind of grounds up, fix America from the ground up reform package, which fits together as a glove and will actually revitalize the economy and get people more jobs, get investment coming in from abroad, and also raise real wages, which we haven't seen real wage growth in terms of out-of-pocket pay since 1965. So we need to do something dramatic to turn things around, and that means fundamental reform of our institutions. I mean, just take taxes. Right now, we have one of the highest, if not the highest, effective marginal taxes for corporations of any of the developed countries. And what we're doing is we're driving corporations out of the U.S. to operate abroad. What we want to do is make the U.S. the most tax-friendly place for businesses to operate, but we also want to make sure that rich people that own corporations and are Americans pay their fair share of taxes. So I've got a reform plan that gets rid of the corporate income tax, gets rid of the personal income tax, gets rid of the estate and gift tax. Now, all that sounds like a far right-wing Tea Party person who wants to just abolish all taxes, but I have other taxes I'm replacing those with. I've got a value-added tax of 20%. There's a carbon tax. There's a personal progressive consumption tax that hits just the rich. And then there's no ceiling on the FICA tax. So I think my package of taxes is much more efficient, will bring an enormous amount of investment into the U.S., will stimulate job growth and also real wage growth, and that will start to jumpstart the economy. And then getting our fiscal house in order by reforming Social Security, by reforming health care, we'll be in a position to move ahead into the future. I think if people really do their homework, read the book, understand what I'm pushing for, get 10 other friends to endorse me and pledge to vote for me, to write me in my VP candidate on November 8th and ask each of those 10 to get another 10, this thing will be combinatorial and will succeed. We'll overcome this kind of status quo bias where we're stuck with these two parties. But people have to vote out of who they want, not out of fear of the other person, because neither of these two people are acceptable as presidents. Let's think about this. President Clinton, people like him a lot, but what did he do really in office? I mean, if we got just President Clinton again, Bill Clinton, not Hillary, what would we get? Leaving aside the scandals, we would get somebody who didn't fix Social Security, someone who didn't fix health care, someone who didn't fix banking, probably made banking more dangerous, someone who didn't fix taxes, someone who let the fiscal gap get bigger and bigger, someone who's talking about having been fiscally conservative, but that's just based on the numbers that were on the books. If you looked at the numbers that were off the books, he was a fiscal disaster. And then he was followed by GW, who's probably the fiscally most profligate president in history, and got nothing fixed. So we've got parties that get nothing fixed. They make things worse. We've got a Social Security system that's, whatever, 70 years old, that has been built in pieces. It's got 2,728 rules in its handbook. It's got hundreds of thousands of rules in its handbook. It's completely dysfunctional. Nobody can figure out what to get. And half the people at Social Security don't know what to tell people to do because they're telling them the wrong thing. I mean, that's just typical. If you're a small businessman like I am, I've got a company on the side, does personal financial planning software, got to file taxes in 50 states for corporate income tax returns and sales tax returns and unemployment insurance and payroll taxes. And the amount of bookkeeping, annual reports, the amount of bookkeeping is about $150,000 a year for a small business to operate throughout the country in this country. I would change that. I would make it small businesses could operate with very low overhead costs throughout the country and help small businesses get going in a serious way. I would try and equalize educational opportunity using new online technology and, in effect, produce smaller class sizes in the inner city and make sure that everybody gets a uniformly high education because they can get a good chunk of that education online. So it's the same education you can get in the top private schools or, you know, Andover Academy. That same course would be given in, you know, Roxbury High School in our ghetto in Boston. So there's a lot of very innovative ideas in what I'm putting out there. I'm hearing no innovation. I'm hearing nothing of substance. I'm hearing just slogans from these two candidates. And I think I'm like you. I'm disgusted. And that's why I'm running. And all I need is people to get on board. And the press is starting gradually to come along.
Professor, you know, one of the things I would like to do is get our listeners more informed because we did a show recently and for 30% of Medicare beneficiaries, their premiums are going to be going up 23% next year. Nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about the Social Security trustees fund report that just shows that liabilities, unfunded liabilities went up by another $6 trillion in a single year. Why don't you give out your website as we close where our listeners can go out and become more informed about the issue of Social Security because neither of the candidates are talking about it. In fact, they're being irresponsible about it. So are most of people in Congress as well as the media.
Well, I tell you, I was reading the trustees report last night. I'm going to be blogging about it at Kotlikoff2016.com. either tonight or tomorrow. It's incredible. We have a $6 trillion deficit that, you know, the increase in the unfunded liability went up, as you said, from $26 trillion to $32 trillion in 1 year. That's an enormous deficit. That needs to be added to the maybe $300 or $400 billion deficit. We've got a deficit that's miles higher just in Social Security than we have on the dealing with the official numbers. And then we've got the overall fiscal gap. The CBO put out projections, and they failed to put out the projections they actually believe are true, which are called the alternative fiscal scenario. They just left them out of their projections. So they're putting us in a position of not being able to even understand our long-term finances anymore. This was an unbelievable act of deceit. And you're not even allowed to look at the numbers. of what our long-term finances actually are. They're putting out numbers that are based on assumptions that nobody within the CBO believes. But we have a chairman of the CBO who apparently thinks he can just pull the rug over people's eyes and that nobody's going to be looking. Well, I'll be the economist who's going to be writing on my presidential website, but also in Forbes and Huffington Post and everywhere else I can write that the CBO's director should be fired unless he gets this fixed. This is his most important job, and he just blew it by concealing this information. And I'll keep writing that month after.
Well, keep up the good work, Professor, because a lot of our politicians and a lot of people in government now are more interested in obfuscation of facts and keeping the American public. But I think at deep down, the American public knows there's something wrong and they're not being told the truth. Professor, as we close, give out your website one more time.
Kotlikoff2016.com. Please contribute, volunteer, and endorse my candidacy online there. Just endorse my decision to run. That's all I'm asking you to do. Get 10 other people to do the same. Form groups that are going to pledge to vote for me in November. And let this thing multiply. Let it be a combinatorial solution to our problem here, because it's actually very easy to elect a write-in candidate. It's never happened in recent years. Well, we've had a Senator Murkowski from Alaska was voted in as a write-in candidate. So it has happened, but not at the presidential level, but it will happen. And when it happens, everything will change, and it will change for the good.
Professor, as always, thanks for joining us on the program, and keep up the good work and keep getting those facts out so our listeners and the public and voters at large can become more well-informed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, that concludes my interview with Lawrence Kotlikoff. If you've been listening to this program, you'll remember I had him on the show last year when they made those sweeping changes to Social Security that really put women at a disadvantage. There were changes that were put in the year 2000 to make up the difference between the gap between men and women, and they just threw those out the door, got rid of a lot of strategies. They're still making a lot of mistakes, as you heard the professor talk about, where individuals were being given the wrong advice from the Department of Social Security. So do yourself a favor. Go to his website. If you want to endorse him, endorse him. But learn about your Social Security and learn the truth. There was a trustees report that came out as we discussed in that interview. It's underfunded by an additional $6 trillion. And you've got two candidates running for presidency that are doing nothing about it. They're lying about it, and they're not telling people the truth. If you make over $85,000 next year, you're going to see your Medicare premiums go up 23% along with your deductibles. So much for the fact that healthcare costs were supposed to be brought down. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.